With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to Rate Don't Hate. I am your seemingly unlucky host this season, Guy Drinkle, who has cursed Liverpool going off our record so far this season. But I am joined by Gareth, the writer on the site, and seemingly a draw specialist. How are you doing, Gareth?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me, Guy.
Absolutely. It's a weird one. I'll ask you this because you probably won't get a chance on many other podcasts. Your overall thoughts on the start of the season? What was it? Six games in now. We've had a couple of wins, a couple of draws, and a loss now, or whatever the hell the record actually is. It's not what anyone wanted. But I was watching Match of the Day last night, and I saw we were like sixth, which obviously can change because I think there's one more game left between United and Arsenal. I just kind of awestruck that we've not completely just dropped into the bottom half of the table, albeit it is only six games.
It does feel like a nightmare start to the season more than the table would suggest. It hasn't been a good experience for any of us as supporters, with the exception of late winners and 9-0s and I suppose the Community Shield as well. But I don't think there's any reason to be panicking or, you know, massively worried that everything is going to go wrong this season like we might have in quite reasonably in January of 2021. But the way that it looks from here, I just think we have to give it time and see how the squad cohesion comes together and how the performances come together. Because it's not been a good start to the season, but it also hasn't been dramatically awful. We're not losing game after game or anything like that. We're not putting a losing streak together. We're just not doing what is expected, which is as we dominate possession or, you know, seem to be putting the pressure on the other team, we're not making it count. We're not bringing away the 3 points, and hopefully that'll change soon.
Yeah, I think the only thing that maybe people are worrying about is that we've had a somewhat easy start to the season, and I think obviously, Champions League aside, I think we've got Chelsea, City, someone else in the next few games. But maybe they're the games that could be the wake-up call to our season, hopefully. Maybe just playing, I'm going to use United because I can. They're that bad. It was just like, we'll win this. Whereas if we're playing Chelsea or City, we can actually think about it a bit more.
So, yeah. The evidence suggests that we know how to beat Manchester City, even this season. But it's just going to be a matter of, you know, who's available in the squad and whether or not they're able to put their passes together on the day.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And we will cover some, let's call them problem positions. We might avoid the midfield because I think that's been done to death. But with some articles and stuff that have came up from journals after the game, it might be worth discussing the narrative around a couple of players. But we'll get to them as we go along. There are some kids screaming outside my house. I'm not going to go like shout at some random children. So if you can hear that through the mic, my bad. But we'll get into the team. As we always do, we start with Alisson, which has been kind of quite a boring person to talk about this season because he's always been kind of left really on unsavable conditions. But I think that was anything but in this game, Garrett, because he was actually involved in, I think he made two really good saves and obviously a couple more Allison-type stuff. But them two saves, the deflected or the double-deflected one, I think he came off Milner in the end, and then the Maupay chance. That's why we rave so much about Allison being the best keeper in the world.
Yeah, certainly one-on-one, he's got fantastic ability, and you almost expect him to get it every single time when attackers running right at him with the ball. You're worried. I think in the chance you're talking about was, it was like 5-on-3 breakaway or something like that, with Salah coming in trying to play the center back role. It was really, really worrying in the moment, and he just totally shuts it down and restores faith in our ability to not let the ball go in the back of the net. I gave Allison a 9 overall because I think he was just so impressive and such a big part of what gave us, you know, something from the match. There wasn't a lot else to be celebratory about, so I'm choosing to be celebratory about this. And there is also the dynamic of it being, you know, one keeper against the other as the big difference makers for each of the sides. And as good as Pickford was on the day, I think overall the quality, you know, game on game for Allison is so good that I would expect that we have more faith in our keeper than they do on theirs on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I was actually just shocked that Pickford was their captain. Because he just, you know, maybe they just thought, got an angry bloke from Sunderland as captain. It works for Liverpool, it might work for us. Yeah,
well, he's always screaming at his players anyway, so maybe that's the attitude they want.
Absolutely. But yeah, it was really a battle of the keepers. He's got an 8. I think I gave him an 8. Yeah, I did. He's got an 8 rating from the listeners as well. What did you go with, Garrett?
Yeah, 9. So nine.
Beautiful.
I'm just extra happy with having a clean sheet on the
thankful,
day.
Thankful is the word rather than happy.
Sure. Just specifically with Allison feeling good.
Yeah, it was a very good day from Allison. Let's do the centre backs first, because I think there's more to discuss with the full backs. Van Dijk, I suppose the first place to start is, do you think it was a red card?
The
stampede ankle.
Yeah, no, not a red card. Definitely not. He's not. It's not high enough on the leg. He's not coming in late enough. It's not reckless enough. I can understand why people would say it's a concern and it looks similar to a red card challenge, but no, it's not a red card for me.
Yeah, I think it was Genus on the UK coverage on BT. I think he said Van Dijk was basically backing off. It wasn't the most forceful challenge, but if he was like sprinting towards and there was more force in it, I think,
yeah
it would certainly be an argument for the red card. But that won't stop opposition fans and Twitter showing the screenshots for the next 2 years when they talk about Liverpool and all that jazz. But I think it's an orange card if we do that old horrendous cliche. But overall, I think we defended okay, or certainly the centre-backs defended quite well, I think. I don't think Van Dijk was overly troubled, bar maybe when we got counter-attacked on. You mentioned one there where it was like 5-on-3, where we were a bit spread out. But overall, I think what they had to do, I think they were quite fine. I don't think they really excelled in anything, because Everton's chances seemed to come from those counter-attacks where it was really difficult for the centre-backs.
Yeah, and you wonder exactly where the problems are with that. You know, is there too much attacking impetus from the young midfielders who don't cover the same spaces that more experienced midfielders do? At the same time, Everton didn't give us that much to worry about, so you can understand the selection from the manager in that part. But for the center backs, I would say that at the very beginning of the game, it looked worrying. They had this, that they didn't look like they were clicking perfectly, and you couldn't tell if there was a lack of movement when they needed to have more impetus, you know, closing down or what it was. But I was really worried about our defending early on. And then as the game progressed, even though Everton continued to have chances. They didn't have much in the way of dangerous chances. It wasn't the type of thing where I kept thinking something bad was going to happen.
It was just the Davies one where he hit the post, wasn't it? I think that was the one where it was a mix-up. But other than that, I think it was more they caught us on the counter-attacking numbers. But Davies hit the post, and then I think we kind of shrewed up a bit, didn't we?
Yeah, and he didn't take that shot with much conviction. So as much as you thought it was going in, it didn't seem systemically worrying afterwards. It was just a moment, and we moved past it.
yeah, absolutely. Ratings for the pair. I went with 6 for Van Dijk and 7 from Gomez. I think Gomez was just a tad more composed and obviously didn't have didn't make us be annoyed with other people on Twitter with stupid red card things. But yeah, I thought Gomez was a tad more composed.
Yeah, I did the same, actually. 7 for Gomez, 6 for Van Dijk. I thought Gomez had a strong match overall. He had one moment early on that worried me, but overall, I just thought he's had a really good run of games, and he's putting together, you know, his CV as he presents to Klopp that when everyone's fit, he still has a role to play.
Yeah, I might as well ask you about that. Obviously, Matip came on in the game and there wasn't really loads to talk about with Matip, but Matip's back and I think Ebu's meant to be back after the international break, I think. I'm not sure if I remember that being true or where I heard that. But obviously, we know we got to rotate our centre-back because they are kind of made of Pringles at times. But I think Gomez has used this quite well. I think that the first couple of games he maybe didn't look to the right level of what we were last season, but I think he's certainly growing into that. And I think that's always been a problem with Gomez. He's always kind of been a slow recoverer from injuries or getting sharpness back. But I think he's back in the rotation properly, but we may need him at fullback, which we'll talk about in a sec. But Gomez, I think, kind of grew really well into the season, to be fair to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that last season we saw Matip and Ebu rotating with each other. And so until Ebu comes back, we might see the same with Matip and Gomez now. But like you say, you might want him to be used in the fullback role. So why don't we get to that?
Yes. Do you want to get Tsimikas out the way before we go about Trent? I thought he started off a tad panicky, but I think by the time I'm going to get this other wrongly subbed him off, I think he was probably one of our more effective players going forward. And to be fair, I think he defended quite well throughout. I think he kept, obviously they swapped Gray and Gordon quite a bit in the first half, but I think he dealt with whoever was on his side quite well. I mean, where is Tsimikas on my spreadsheet? I gave him a 6, but I almost went with a 7. I think it's just the fact that he got taken off as he was growing into the game in a more attacking sense.
Yeah, I gave him a 7. I think he had a good match. I wasn't worried about him. I thought he did a lot of good attacking work. Nothing that, you know, was difference making. Obviously, he had the tight angle opportunity where he tries to take a shot and just sort of side foots it across the face of the goal. But I can't tell a fullback that they have to score from a weird angle. You know, it's not it's not their job. I can't be too upset that he doesn't get something like that on target. But yeah, he put in some good balls. He also has really good little passing moves with our, you know, left winger and left center mid. Whenever he's asked to try and create in that area, you can see he's making good runs, connecting well. So yeah, I gave him a 7.
I'll bring Roberts into the debate now, and if we want to do the rate, we might as well, because who cares? This is the subs. But with Robbo's lack of form, I'll ask you what you think Klopp thinks and what you think. Would you have Tsimikas as the number one left back, and what do you think Klopp thinks is the current order?
I think that Klopp likes the idea this season of switching them. I think it's not just about rotation or tiredness or competition. I think he specifically likes the idea of having one and then the other in order to change things up and have a bit of unpredictability. And I think there's a broader conversation about whether or not it's the same on the left and the right. But I think he's realized that the fullbacks are the most creative roles that he's developed in the entire system. And as a result, you should treat them much like you would a creative player on any other more, you know, conventionally set up team, where you would definitely be subbing an attacking midfielder or someone like that who's expected to create, so that you can change things up and so that they can put so much energy into the hour or so that they're on. Now, whether or not that's always a good idea is another matter, because of their defensive responsibilities and the solidity that you need from your back line. But I do think that there's something intentional going on there, where maybe it has something to do with, you know, being told that our attack is a bit too predictable at the highest level or something like that. But I think he's really intentionally trying out the possibility of, you know, consistently switching out one or both fullbacks in order to change the type of expectations from the defense, shake things up a little bit when we really need a goal and we're not getting one because 90% of the people we play against default to that low block.
Yeah, I think Conte kind of did that, obviously managing in Italy where they've had five subs when he was last there. He could probably do that more effectively, but obviously we've got five subs now, so I think you're probably right in that. Trent, what's up with Trent? I mean, I went with a three, which I think he defended okay in certain instances. Like, I think there was that one where he covered behind the centre-backs. I can't remember who the Everton player was, and that was good. And then, well, you compare him to who replaced him on in that position. He defended much better than Milner. But Trent, I mean, his passing's always been one of his strengths, along with his crossing and other stuff like that. But the passing, man, it just looks lackadaisical. It looks almost lazy at times, which I don't think it's something that you can put at anyone in our team, never mind Trent. But it's just not something our team is built on. But he does look lazy at times, especially with his on-ball stuff, which is his real strength.
Yeah, last time we talked about Trent, you and I remember mentioning that there's this idea that he can't really carry the team on its own, on his own. He's not the one that lifts everyone else up. And I keep thinking about that, and maybe the problem for him is that he's always looking for everyone else around him to lift themselves up, because he's able to do that himself. It's kind of a Steven Gerrard thing, where you had the moments where he would really, really pull everyone together and yell at them, and then there were other times, which is, you know, more the Trent line of thinking that I'm thinking of, where he would do really well on his own and just look around and just be like, why are none of you elevating your game? So I wonder if he's just a bit young and doesn't have the sort of leadership qualities yet to bring everything together. There's definitely something wrong with his mentality, though, because he's not linking up correctly. You know, on this particular match, I wasn't as bothered by it as I have been in previous ones. His passing was a bit off. He was trying to make things happen, but I gave him a five. I think he did really well on that one defensive opportunity that you're talking about. It's the exact type of thing that he's been told he's weak on before, and he tracked the runner perfectly, gets the interception to lay it off, and then Virgil cleared it away. So I remember that moment early on being like, all right, Trent's defensively on it. And he was defensively on it. You know, he didn't have too much trouble in that way. So for a right back, I'd like to give him a higher grade because of that. But we rely on him to have good passing, and he didn't.
Yeah, especially whilst the midfield's Thiago-less as well, which is, well, it's always a problem with Thiago. but no, I think the listeners seem to be edging more towards you rather than me being overly harsh. They've gone with a 4 or 5, and the other defenders got about a 6, so not really worth talking about in that regard. But a 4 or 5 for Trent, it's just a bad spell of form. But I think some people have noticed that he's either always been a slow starter or a slow finisher of the season, so hopefully this is just him waking up, because maybe it'll take the international break, and, well, he's not been in the best form, so maybe it's the first time Southgate can justifiably not pick him. He probably will start him in every game, though. But yeah, 5, four probably seems about right for Trent. Let's move into the midfield. Let's start with the two young lads, because I think Fabinho obviously plays his own position. Carvalho, we were going to do a bit more on Newcastle, but then we realised it was about 2 years ago, considering the Everton game, so we won't talk about it too much. But Carvalho obviously had that great moment against Newcastle, winning us the game, almost justifiably picking him as a starter, because obviously Henderson's injured, who's been the starting left centre mid. Thiago's obviously injured all the time. And Milner probably just keeping his fullback cover. I was excited ahead of this game, but I think as more went on, it was like, I think we need a midfielder in there, because for me, Carvalho still looks like a forward, which I think is probably why we bought him, because he played predominantly as a 10 for Fulham and left wing at times, and I think that's where he's looked most comfortable for us in the forward areas. But long-term development is a different thing. But Carvalho, for you, obviously feel free to go back to the Newcastle game, but a tough game for him, I think.
Yeah, I don't want to be too harsh on him, because like you say, the Newcastle game, he brings so much joy to us all in the final moments. I gave him a 5 for this one. I thought, you know, on balance, it's the type of thing where him or Elliot probably shouldn't have started. If we wanted to bring him in, you know, reward him for the Newcastle game, we needed a little bit more of a midfielder in there to cover, because I think they just got past him too easily. He was just bypassed, which makes sense with, you know, counter-attacking. They're often going to just send it long or something like that. But every time they passed, you know, strung 3 or 4 passes together, it looked far too easy. And you could see on our right side, there would be the press from Elliot and whoever trying to make sure that they couldn't get through, and they would just barely get the passes together. But when it came through the middle, or, you know, somewhere where you might expect Carvalho to be, I think they just had a bit too easy of a time with it. So defensively, he was not strong, and that's really what brought him down the most. And also his attacking role, you want him to be creating more. He did look to bring that endeavor to the game, but it didn't really come off for him. Whereas for Elliot, I thought, you know, it was looking pretty good. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, it's a weird one with Elliot, because I think almost boringly, or just not looking at it with any depth, I think people are looking at the struggles in midfield and just thinking, Elliot was a winger, and now we're playing in and there. And individually, he's playing quite well, but the midfield's not really worked that well. I think that's almost quite lazy to look at it, because I think when you just look at Elliot in a vacuum, I think it's quite exciting and stuff like that. But if you look a bit beyond that, he is doing the defensive stuff. Maybe you want him to be a bit more physical, but I think he is only 19. There's still a level of physicality to come there. And if he was a bit quicker, etc. But he's 19. That will come. The physicality especially. I think this was maybe a slightly quieter game than, say, the Newcastle one, where I think most people had him as man of the match. But I still think he was certainly one of our, certainly more competent, but if not just one of our brighter players.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I only went with a 6, but that's probably quite high for our attacking players in this game. What did I go with? Yeah, I went with a 6 for him. I went with a 4 for Carvalho, just because, again, he's blameless in this, but I just don't think it's his position, especially on the left side where it's the more defensive side. I almost think Elliot could probably do that a bit more, because we saw him in the midfield too in the second half. So maybe we could have tinkered it a bit there. But yeah, it's maybe one that maybe we should have threw our Turin or Milner should have just started in midfield, I think. But what was your rating for Elliot?
I actually gave him a 7. I'd love to see him, you know, score or something like that in his attacking moves. I just thought he did a lot of good work.
Yeah.
He was excelling while people around him were being more functional. I thought better at keeping the ball than most of the other players. He didn't have quite so many wayward passes, although I haven't looked at the stats on that. It was just my impressions. Yeah, I thought he did really well, and I would have liked to have seen, you know, more work ahead of him that came off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe we'll come back to him and his relationship with Mo Salah once we get to Mo. But we'll finish the midfield with Fabinho. I'm sure you've seen all the pass maps and heat maps and stuff of our team, and he's doing a lot of work. And I think he's almost getting, not blamed, but probably overly criticised for the amount of work he has to do. Because when we were at our best, our midfield worked in such a way that Ginny was always next to Fabinho. Henderson's role was a bit more defensive on the right than it is probably nowadays for, say, Elliot or when Henderson was playing there last season. So in terms of our midfield changing, I think Fabinho's doing quite well, especially considering he's playing basically with two wingers in midfield with him. I went with a 7, but I've seen quite a few people almost criticising him, saying he's not the same player he was. But I think the midfield's changed, maybe more due to personnel than actual system. And I think he's doing probably the best he can with what's around him.
Yeah, I think your rating is probably fair. I gave him a 6. I think, you know, he was doing his job pretty well. And that's what I usually give for a 6, you know. Is it, you're doing your job, you're not being a massive difference maker. On the defensive side, I thought he was quite strong, and his passing wasn't the worst. It just I heard him called isolated a couple of times. And for me, it just seems like he didn't really have space or time to get anything done because he was expected to do so much, like you're saying.
Yeah, it's strange because I think if you look at the best midfields in the league, even look at Man City, I think Rodri plays a bit more on his own compared to our midfield, but they have someone like Bernardo Silva, who's a physical freak and will basically play box to box. Even De Bruyne kicks in defensively, whereas we just mentioned Elliot, maybe he's a trier in defensively, but I think he's not at that physical level where he can do the full box-to-box thing. And Carvalho, we said, probably not his best position. But yeah, I think it's maybe that, well, transition's the buzzword on social media. Maybe that is the change, but we'll talk when we get to more. Let's move into the forward line then. Luis Diaz... Him and Patterson, I think, had quite a good duel. But other than hitting the post, there wasn't really the spark of end product there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, Luis Diaz had a rough match. I think, you know, there's that moment where he hits the corner and it flashes across the goal. And I knew as soon as it hit the bar that it wasn't going in. It looked like it might squeeze in maybe, but... I think the problem for Diaz was that they were just defending so tight and so dedicated to stopping any movement that he had. Patterson, I don't know anything about him except that he had a good game against Luis Diaz. It was quite frustrating. I gave him a 5.
Yeah, sure.
I almost feel bad about it just because, you know, the endeavor is there, but. There were a couple moments where he was arriving on the ball and you thought he might be able to do something and it was just immediately stopped by the defender. And I just thought his quality is above every single one of those Everton players that he's up against. And he just needed to find a way to apply himself, find a little bit of space. And instead he just got shut down far too often.
Yeah, it was just the industry of their midfield was on a level we've probably not seen from Everton in a few years, because when we were playing them and the games were almost somewhat easy, it was Alan in midfield who just can't move. Whereas you look at it now, that Onana looks basically like a monster. Iwobi is this year's Joelinton and can just do a bit of everything. Tom Davies is Tom Davies. But yeah, their midfield seems to be on another level from what we've seen in recent years for them, to be fair. So that probably helped in that regard. We'll do Darwin before we do Salah. It's a tough one to judge because especially for the first half, I don't remember them passing the ball because what I remember of him in the first half was basically chasing after fullbacks and stuff like that when him and Diaz changed round. But that's not where you want your 60-odd mil striker. It's a bit of an odd one. But when I think we did get him them chances, he obviously wasted a couple of the headers. But that Torres-esque volley over his shoulder, that's fantastic, and you can't blame Pickford for saving that. I blame Darwin for Pickford saving that, obviously. So a real mixed day, I think, for Darwin. And obviously, I think this is where this whole transition conversation's coming from social media. It's just an odd one, and I think we're still obviously learning how to play with him.
Yeah, I think, you know, he did occupy them pretty well at different times, and couple of header opportunities after he missed the first one. I thought, all right, he'll get the next one. No, definitely not. Hit it right at the keeper for another good opportunity.
Yeah.
I gave him a 6 because I thought, for a striker, you get a few good opportunities and you get him close or on target, and you're basically doing your job. not for real, because obviously your real job is to score, but you can't score every match. And in this particular one, I really thought it was Salah that needed to be the one to bury a goal, where Darwin, obviously the headers are a bit of an exception, mm-hmm. where he could just do better. But yeah, I gave him a 6 because I thought he was doing well enough to warrant scoring a goal and just couldn't quite get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the commentary we had, the back post one, it's like you compare it to Mitrovic, and it's like, it's a bit wider. It's not within the goal. It's a much tougher header, but you still think he should do better. But I think, what did I go? I think I went with a 5 for Darwin. No, I went with a 4. I went harsh. Look at me. I might change that to a 5, but we'll stick with a 4 for now. You should have scored the header, clearly. I'll change that to a 5. That feels harsh, considering maybe the lack of clean opportunities, to be fair to him.
But now we arrive at Salah.
Yes. Now, this is the interesting discussion for Salah, because people are always discussing how he's now seemingly pushed so far wide, and it's not getting the best out of him and stuff like that. And I think the stats going around, he's created the most, I think it's big chances or clear-cut chances in the league, and I think it's by about a factor of 10 or something like that. So I think maybe before this game, he's been quietly, is probably the key word, but I think he's been quietly quite good or okay. Whereas in this game, he just wasn't involved until basically the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, do you put that down to the rest of the team's performance, or do you think that's more him just not getting involved? I mean, it's a weird one to word, but do you put this down to the system, the other players, or do you put it down to him personally?
I think it's incumbent on him, as possibly the best player in the world, to get involved in the match. And it's not like the ball wasn't coming to him at all. But, you know, when he tried to... I didn't know the defender, that Everton's left-back, Mykolenko.
Yeah.
He had a couple moments where he would drive right at him and the ball would just go right into the defender's feet.
Yeah.
And I thought, surely you have a bit more to your game than that. He wants to dance past them, and I get that. You know, he's quite good at it at times, but he doesn't seem to build up the same level of pace and attacking endeavor, you know, in those moments where he gets the ball at his feet, he has someone in front of him, and he's going to take him on. I just want him to move a bit more quickly. Mm-hmm. And like you say, if he's starting out too wide sometimes, that, you know, it's led to many good creative opportunities. He got 2 assists in the previous match. The main, you know, credit should be for the one that he laid off to Firmino, because he is quite wide and just slides it perfectly into his feet for the finish. But in this match, the reason why the being wide is the problem for me is that it's not like he doesn't have license to come more central at different times. So, you know, change it up a little bit, find your moments when you want to come in a little bit more, especially when Darwin is, you know, going off wide. Or even Luis Diaz came over to the right side one time, I remember, and he just stayed out by the touchline. Like, he was expecting Luis Diaz to just go away at some point. But he used to be better, I think, at overlapping and, you know, coming in narrow when the situation called for it. And I'm just kind of waiting for him to, you know, pick his moments and figure out how coming in narrow, arriving on the end of the ball as it's coming into the box. You know, he used to get tap-ins and things like that, and now he just wants to only get the more difficult shots. At the same time, I don't want to be harsh on him overall, because he is consistently bringing, you know, great moments for us. And like you said, at the very end of the match, he looked quite strong, and I think had probably the best shot of the match. Firmino had a good one, but his shot at the end that goes bottom right corner and Pickford barely gets his hand on it to touch it onto the post, I think that was our best attempt on goal. So if it had gone in, everything looks different, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. And it's a strange one with Mo, because I think it's a mix of both the system seemingly changing and obviously the long-term relationship he had with Mane and Bobby, maybe Bobby less so, because we saw a lot of Jota in especially the first half of last season. But I think Jota's obviously been there a bit longer, and they seem to click. It's just odd, because I think the under pressure lads have mentioned he's just getting no touches in the box. For a player like Mo, it almost feels criminal, whether it's him just always looking for the safety of space or something like that, or it maybe is Klopp saying we maybe want Darwin to be the main goal scorer or something, and you kind of create space and for him. I'm not sure what it is, and it's certainly not working as well as it should be. And I think we can all agree on that, regardless of what the reason is for it. We need to either tinker with his role, or maybe it's a lack of confidence, because I think, albeit we went on that massive run after AFCON, Mo's individual form wasn't the same after AFCON. Obviously, keeping up them levels of being the best player in the world, it is difficult unless you're Lionel Messi or Ronaldo. Well, before the last few years. But I don't know, the drop-off started a long time ago, and now it seems to have been heightened, probably. That's probably the wrong word, but I don't know. It seems to be more evident now than it was in the second half of last season.
He's generally bringing a strong performance, even if he's not scoring. And he's, you know, like you say, he's creating opportunities, and so maybe his role has been changed a little bit. I just hope that we'll see him come to life again soon. Yeah. I think the Champions League might light a fire under him, or just generally, you know, the way things are going, if things start clicking for other people on the pitch, it might start clicking for him as well, and he might find his form. I expect that at some point he'll have a better understanding with Darwin and Luis Diaz than he does right now. And I think one of the things that we saw last season is that he knew how to play with Mane. He definitely knew how to play with Mane. I'm not sure that he knows exactly what Luis Diaz is doing and if they have quite the same connection. And certainly Darwin's just getting started. So if it's a front three that we're expecting to, you know, smoothly overlap and do things like they used to do when, you know, Bobby was in his peak in 17-18 and Salah was setting the Premier League goal record, which hopefully he'll retain after this season. I think that, you know, we'll see the best of him again this season, and hopefully it's for a really long stretch of the season and not just half of it or a couple months or something.
Yeah, maybe we need not a run, because we'll have to rotate because the schedule's mental, but maybe we need to maybe refamiliarize him, maybe just start playing Jota and Bobby more, who he obviously has longer term relationships with. Just to maybe spark that, maybe just them two switch in the middle, and then maybe Darwin and Diaz can switch on the left or something like that. Obviously, Jota can play on the left as well, but maybe if we want to fire up more, maybe that's to get something for the Champions League, where not every point feels like a disaster if we drop a point, especially in the first half of it. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if this lingers any much longer, or we try and tinker with the formation or something. Because as we said, I think he did finish the game stronger than the rest of it. So he's still in there. We just got to kind of get it from the start of the match. But I think that's kind of the same for a lot of our players, sadly, this season.
Well, they're all going to be affected differently by this strange season with the short preseason and the big gap in the middle. But Salah's the one that I'm the most curious about. How is that World Cup going to affect him, since he won't be going? So he'll have his break. He'll have the training camp in Dubai with the rest of the squad who aren't, you know, I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think anyone who's out after the group stage will be rejoining, so that could be anyone. But I'm just hoping that the Champions League gets him back up and going for the rest of the autumn, and then come the winter and spring after the World Cup, he'll just have a completely different perspective after, you know, seeing everyone else get to participate when he can't.
Yeah, absolutely. What rating did you give Salah, by the way?
I gave Salah a 5. I was gonna give him a 4, but I really like that shot at the end.
Yeah, and in terms of listeners' ratings, I forgot to do the midfield as well. I'll quickly go through that. Fabinho 6-7, probably about right. Fabio Carvalho 4.7, a tad harsh, but I can see it in terms of the performance. But the overall context may be a tad harsh. Elliot 5-5, that's probably a bit harsh, I think. Darwin 5-5, Diaz 5-8, and Mo 4.7. Not great from them. But probably the other positive or undenied positive with Alisson's probably Bobby. Came on, no idea what position he was playing. He was popping up on the left, the right, the middle. He just seemed to have the freedom of the park. He certainly got us clicking, is probably the right word, especially till the second set of subs, which were obviously kind of hinted at criticising throughout throughout this podcast. But Bobby coming on at halftime for the injured Carvalho, that 20 odd mins before the other subs, that was probably the best spell of the game for us, and I think he was a big part of that.
Yeah, that in the last 10 minutes, which we keep hinting at what the problem is in between those moments. But yeah, Bobby was great. He was a lot of fun to watch. I think, you know, I'm not going to say this with any confidence, but when Klopp is really going for a win, you know, we really need that. One of the things that he does is a sort of 4-2-4, where the two wingers are properly wide, and then you get a shadow striker in with your regular striker. And that's why I think Firmino has that license to move all around. And then, you know, at the end there, we're looking at, it's just Milner and Fabinho left in the midfield. Is that right?
It was Elliot till... When did Elliot go off? Elliot went off on 80 mins.
Yeah.
So I think that's when Matip came on, and then Gomez went right back. So, yeah, it was Elliot for the most part. But, yeah, it was definitely a two-man midfield for after that sub.
Yeah, that was the moment where I remember seeing the shape more clearly, you know, expecting Milner to occupy some spaces out wide, but he had suddenly become, you know, very much a central midfielder and moving around trying to have an effect on the game there. So I gave Firmino a 7. I'm not
as
sure
did
about
I you. Yes, I was the same. I think maybe could have done a couple better finishes, but in terms of his overall impact, he changed the tide of the game, or certainly injected something in terms of our attack linking together into the game. Tested Pickford probably more than anyone else. So yeah, good impact from him. He got a 6.5 from the listeners, which is quite high on today's ratings. It's not really worth talking about Jota and Matt if they got 10 minutes. Jota didn't really have a chance to get into the game, and Matip a couple loose passes, but other than that, he had real no defending to do that I remember. Robertson and Milner. We had the discussion about who we see as first choice left back, and we kind of hinted at Robertson there. I just don't think he got up to the speed of the game when he got in. It wasn't as extreme as the other substitute we'll finish with. But what Tsimikas coming off, Tsimikas was growing into the game attacking-wise, whereas when Robbo came on, I should say, the link just didn't seem smooth, and it almost just that side just kind of died when he came on.
Hmm. Yeah, sometimes because he's got so much creative responsibility, you want to see him, you know, really advancing the entire play forward and taking some responsibility there. And I think that's what was lacking, because he was fine defensively. Absolutely no problems with the way he played defensively personally. You know, sometimes he's pushed up high and he has to backtrack quite quickly to cover and everything, and that's expected. There was nothing wrong there. It all worked out pretty much fine. But he didn't really offer much going forward. He didn't get any, I mean, maybe he got one or two in that I don't remember, but I don't remember him getting particularly good crosses in. Mm. or having, you know, like a quick interchange to create some space on the overlap. I gave him a 6 just because I thought arriving in, he's doing his basic job, but now, you know, the way you framed it in particular, he didn't have much in attack, so I think that might be a bit generous, but I'm going to leave it alone at a 6.
Yeah, I went with a 4, just cutting the contrast of, I give Tsimikas a 6. I think I just had to go on the lower side of that midpoint, just because the difference in the performance level. But I don't think I understand why he was sub. Maybe just not the right time, because Tsimikas was growing into it, as we keep saying. James Milner, though. Good Lord. it's weird, because I think before this game, well, to be fair, in the Newcastle game, which we kind of, the odd time, keep jumping back in, I think in the Newcastle game, this sub worked.
Yep.
This time, it really didn't work, because every tackle he missed or lost, Gordon or Gray, whoever was playing that side at the time, just roasted him every time. Like, I am wondering if St. Maximin was playing for Newcastle. we may have seen something similar, but it's weird. Cause in midfield, I think he's been fine. He's not been good or bad. I think he was like a 5 or a 6 whenever he played. But in this game, it terrifies me that, and I will be harsh to Everton because I don't care, two pretty bog-standard wingers who just have a bit of pace did that to him. If that was, who's the best wingers outside of Mo Salah? trying to think now. I've got Zaha stuck in my head for some reason. I'll go with Zaha because he got him sent off once. If that was Zaha or someone a bit better, probably Foden's the right one because we've seen it in the past. That terrifies me if Trent doesn't fix his form, because we will have to rely on Milner playing there and also Gomez playing there, which might be more of an option now that we kind of hinted at when we rated Gomez. But I don't think we can trust him there against pacey opposition, because if he's caught up high, he's never getting back.
Yeah, if we're gonna do something like that, then one of the midfielders is gonna have to be ready, already, you know, occupied with
20 yards back.
Yeah, you know, there have been times when, you know, that was Henderson's role, that he would be out on the right side of the midfield and you would see him consistently covering behind Trent. And so we weren't, you know, as likely to see that in this game, since we're always pushed up, always trying to make something happen. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I don't like being negative about our own players too much, especially considering the circumstances, which is that he's really coming on in age, and you can tell that, mm-hmm. you know, he's struggling to survive at this level. When we came into the season, I saw James Milner as a bit part player, you know, someone who might start at the base of the midfield if we were playing against the lower league opposition in the mm-hmm. FA Cup or something like that. And otherwise, I expected him to be primarily a central midfield sub, someone who came in who understands the game really well, understands when we need to calm it down and when we need, you know, he's got a good footballing head on his shoulders, yeah. But there's something about this season for him where I just think, all right, this is too far for you at this level. You're not doing what you need to get done to keep your place. And maybe, you know, maybe that's why he wasn't considered for the midfield today, because it could have been bad for him to even start and yeah. just struggle throughout until we replaced him.
We mentioned Awobi and Onana being physical presences right. as well, so... Yeah,
we wouldn't want him to get entirely lost in the game and open up for their counterattacks too much. But his fullback days, surely they have to be behind us at some point. I think the last couple of years, I've really thought, you know, he still has a solid choice in midfield, still has a part to play over the course of a long season. And that remains to be seen, but my confidence in him at fullback has been gone for some time now. Yeah, he has his moments. He's come in and done a good job there at different times, but we have to rearrange so much to cover for him when he's not able to track back, because he never was particularly blessed with speed, as far as I know, you know. He's not going to cut it for us, I don't think. I want Ramsey back. I don't know anything about him, but
I'm just not sure he exists at this point.
We've been begging for an out and out backup to Trent, you know, someone, even if they weren't Trent style, maybe they're more Robertson style, but you know, we use him on the right wing or something. I just think that position should be something that we've sorted out by now, and it seemed like we had, but we just haven't had even a glimpse of what it looks like. So if we're going to be subbing out the fullbacks all the time, like I was saying earlier, then you would want it to be an out and out fullback like we have for the two left backs.
Yeah, it is. I think that's just been it. We found Tsimikas and it was basically perfect over on the left, and we see Trent and we moved Gomez last season. Milner's basically been the predominant backup there for a little while, and you're like, physically he's nowhere near the same, stylistically he's not the same, whereas you look, I've not seen Ramsey play. It's like, he can't be worse. But yeah, I think if we're looking to, well, if we have to sub Trent due to lack of form or rotate, now that Matip's back, I just think it has to be Gomez until Ramsey's ready or deemed ready for the Premier League, because Milner's just a target, and I think we can deal with that much better in midfield, as you say, than fullback.
You didn't think you'd be missing Nico Williams in September of 2022, but I sort true. Of am.
It's very true. Oh, God. Oh, dear. It's not great, is it? You said you don't want to be harsh with your ratings. I went with a 2, which I feel is harsh. But it could have lost us the game, and nearly did with their offside goal, to be fair. He's got a 2.8 from listeners. What have you gone with?
You know, I almost gave him a 4, because once he was moved out of the right back role, he looked like he knew what his job was. Mm-hmm. But I gave him a 3. I think he was, you know, he was the weak link. It, almost to the same degree that Alisson was the standout. Yeah. You know, we have all these middling players who can't quite make anything happen. We have a defensive line that don't let anything in, to be fair to them, but it's really down to Alisson. And then we have this right back who, for about a half hour, I don't know exactly how long it was, just really hampered our entire game.
Yeah, I think that's it. You just got to look where their joy came from, and it was counter-attacking against Milner's side, and there was many situations where he lost a tackle high up, or even that offside goal, he got skinned a couple of times and then dived in to try and block the cross. So yeah, I think it's justified, to be fair. I think Wolves is the next league game. What lessons from this game do we take into that? I mean, obviously we've got the midweek Champions League game, but we don't do that for rate, don't hate. But what lessons do we want to take into the next two games, including Napoli and Wolves? Because blunt attack, defence looking slightly better than it was, but I think we're still trying to find the balance, aren't we?
Yeah, and you know, one of the areas where I think there is a balance to be found that we haven't found it is the Carvalho, Trent, Salah triangle.
Mm.
It seems like, you know, maybe it has something. It could be as silly as there being two left footers that are primarily right wingers. You know, in terms of their careers up to this point, that they want to occupy too similar of spaces or something like that. But really, I just think we need a little bit more variety in the type of movement that they make. We need Salah, you know, to be out wide for sure, but we need him to be more narrow sometimes, like we're talking about. We need Trent to come in central sometimes because he can, you know, bang it top corner like he did against Bournemouth. Or we want him to be able to overlap, and you know, he has such a good ball on him. Sometimes it's a floater to the back post, but other times it's just smashing it right at the, you know, at the spot kick, you know, right at 12 yards. There's often someone there who can just smash it towards the goal unpredictably enough that no one can handle it. And I'm, for some reason, thinking about Gini Wijnaldum against Barcelona 4-0, you know,
yes.
Thinking about the good times. I don't have much criticism of Elliot in terms of how he's doing there, but I do think that Salah and Trent both need to put some variety into the type of moves that they're making.
I was going to say, could we try, obviously our midfield, the left side tends to be the more defensive one, but could we try Elliot on the left as like some sort of young version of Bernardo Silva? I'm not sure he's got the legs of Bernardo Silva, but if we tinker it around, and obviously Elliot will have to learn because he's always played on the right from my knowledge. Could we play him on the left? And I'm guessing if we're not going to start Milner, Arteta's going to have a run till Thiago's fit. Maybe we play Arteta. I think Arteta's left-footed, but he's a much more defensive-minded player, obviously. Maybe that could be a shout.
I heard Arteta prefers being on the left side of the midfield, but right, you know, like, does that really matter?
not this stage, no.
So, yeah, I'd be happy to see Elliot try it out. I think that he's doing all the right things such that I wouldn't mess with it too much right now. That's he's not the problem.
No, clearly. He's not, absolutely.
So if Klopp wants to try it out in training and he sees something that he likes, then fine, maybe give it a go. But at the moment, I think the left side, the bigger problem is just making sure that Luis Diaz and the fullback have a good understanding with one another, whoever's coming in, because you know there have been a few good moments where he's laying it off to them and you know they're putting in the cross to the back post or something like that, but I think there could be a little bit more work done, like you say, on that side to create a little bit more. I keep wondering if Curtis Jones is gonna have some sort of revelation where he absolutely understands what it takes to get that side, you know, cooking.
Ticking, yeah. He wasn't on the bench, was he? It's just maybe he had a setback with his injury, but hopefully, I think Thiago's meant to be in training next week, so maybe all our prayers are answered with him, but we know that's only a short-term thing. But yeah, I think Jones, especially with the Naby news, whether he's fallen out with Klopp or he's injured, he's certainly going to miss seemingly till the transfer window because he's been left out the Champions League group. Squad, I should say. So, yeah, it looks like we'll be Naby-less for whatever reason. So I think we're going to have to look at people like Jones taking a step up or Arteta's just to smash it. Who knows?
We don't know what to expect from Arteta. No. That'll be a fun one to watch.
It really will.
I think I heard that Jones was meant to be in the squad and then he wasn't because they got Arteta in properly. So I wonder if Jones, you know, coming back from injury, maybe not being at quite the level of sharpness that we would like. I have this feeling that he'll be in the squad against Napoli and that, you know, we might even see
We have bigger benches in Europe as well, don't we? Or is this, I think it might be both. 9 now, actually. But yeah, hopefully we see both of them. I'd probably start Arthur, and then if Jones is bench ready, I'd like to see him get significant minutes as well.
I'd love to weigh in on that, but I've
never seen him. I just want to see him.
I have no opinions about Arthur in terms of play style. I spend far too much time watching Liverpool and zero time watching the various other European leagues except highlights here and there. And he's not making any highlight reels recently.
So he's not even played for Juve that recently. So, but anyway, we'll finish up there before we do a full preview of Napoli and Wolves. As I said, I was planning on doing Newcastle, but then the Merseyside derby happened. When it gets more mad, I'll make sure we have either one big show or we'll try and do two shows, depending on people's availability. But thank you, everyone, for listening. Big thanks to Garrett for joining me again. When I need a draw, I will definitely ring up Garrett. But thank you, everyone. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.